Wow, now we start our podcast.
Yay! While I read a book, oftentimes I'm texting Laura or Kofi or our other friends, depending on what we're reading, and we're like, oh my gosh, this part is killing me, or like, what about this? Or, you know, and I really had to refrain from texting you guys, like my thoughts on the my live commentary on the book while I was reading the book. If only you knew how much I have spared you from my texts.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil things for people who might be interested in reading the book, but it's really captivating. It's probably not the type of collection of short stories that I think a lot of people would readily gravitate to, because it's somewhat surreal and absurdist in a way, but it's also very poignant. And it's, the stories seem funny, but yet there's something serious and there's something dark and yet witty about the book and, well, this collection of short stories. So I would recommend the book. I would definitely recommend it. I tend not to recommend books, especially if I'm like, it's okay. But this is really interesting. And I think one of the things that I like about the book, that I don't think I'm giving too much away, is there are stories that are about issues, but the stories are about writing and being a creative writer.
Yes.
And I think that those stories are, that resonate more with me. And in fact, I think sometimes when I'm looking at books that are written by people who have MFAs, they almost always have some story that deals with being a writer. And I always find that a treat.
Well, so one of the texts I was going to send you, Kofi, was, what is the fiction equivalent of an Ars Poetica? Because in poetry, you know, we have these poems called Ars Poetica. It's a poem about poetry, right? So you kind of get a little bit meta. Right. And like one of the most famous ones is Marianne Moore's poem, Poetry. And her first line in that poem is, I too dislike it. You know, it's kind of like responding to a lot of people who are like, I just don't get poetry. I don't like it. And so her first line is disarming. It's like, I too dislike it. And this is a poet. But in one of the short stories, I'm wondering if it's The Hospital Where, if it's that story that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's one of them.
One of them, yeah. And as I was reading it, I was like, what's the fiction equivalent of an Ars Poetica? Because I feel like for that story in particular, I mean, obviously, you know, the narrator is actually writing in that story, but the way in which that story plays out and kind of the metaphors that are given and applied to writing, I'm trying to like dance around some of the major plot points, really made me think about, you know, that particular thing too, Kofi, the idea of writers who are writing about the craft of writing.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a fiction equivalent. I think there are fiction writers like William Gass, I'm thinking about with The Tunnel. He's writing a book about writing a book. And and then sort of like the journey of that. And there have been a lot of like French writers who do that. Yeah. Now I'm about to sound like a PhD student. So bear with me. You know, sort of like the French existential writers, like a lot of their works were really about them, but then also about the greater society at all. So like Camus, Sartre, mm-hmm. and even André Malraux, you know, there's like all these different sort of French writers. Sorry, I hope people don't get turned off. But, you know, it's like a lot of the things that we're reading now, you can find that they're troping, or they are, see, I'm using words like troping. they are like echoes of other writers that more than likely they've studied or have been exposed to in some way, shape or form. But again, I don't know if there's if there is a fiction, I haven't heard of it.
Well, I think in Hospital, what is it called? Hospital Where?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? So in terms of that story, it comes in like about a third way into the book. And so after a couple of these really shocking stories, especially the first story, the Finkelstein Five, then all of a sudden I felt like I was seeing the writer writing this book in the hospital. And I think that is the beauty of a collection of short stories too, about the shifting perspectives, right? And so suddenly after a couple of these stories, I'm looking at the author. I felt like the main character was the author. And, you know, over the years, I've trained as a reader to not do that, to, you don't want to equate the narrator with the author. But in that story, I feel like he's almost asking you to do that. Right. So that I wanted to ask the question about, what do you think about the, and I think we touched on this in prior conversation, like the structure of short stories, right? So why is, for example, the Finkelstein Five, the first story, and, you know, Zimmerland comes later, and then why is, you know, Lightspitter where Lightspitter is, and so on? Because those are not accidental, obviously, right? The author is very intentional about those things, and without trying to read the author's mind, what is the effect, I guess, would be the question, of the current structure of this particular collection?
I thought about that a lot as I was reading it. I think about that a lot, I think, with every short story collection, even poetry collection, where you have like, that are not like, you know, one long sustained poem. But I think the tendency is to want to search for connection, you know, between the stories. And sometimes it's there. And I think it's intentional, the ordering of the story. But, you know, I wrote a little descriptive blurb for Friday Black for our Pathways magazine. And in it, you know, I realized, you know, Finkelstein Five is, I think, the story that kind of like punches the hardest in the very beginning. It's the story where, you know, I wrote in the blurb, like from the very first lines, I feel like the author is almost issuing a challenge, you know, will you look? Are you going to continue on? Are you going to, turn away? And it's almost like, this is not for the faint of heart, you know? And so what I take that to mean for myself as a reader is the idea of, I was linking it to the idea of allyship and witness, you know, and especially right now where you have a lot of people decrying a lot of the, you know, racist attacks that we're seeing, you know, around us. I think it's easier to decry these attacks, but it's harder to look and actually see what we've done to ourselves, because it's very raw and it's very visceral. And a lot of the reaction I get about this book that I've been hearing has been, oh, it's really graphic, or it's very violent and it's a little upsetting. And I understand there's like, you know, trauma that some people trigger as they're reading it. But I also at the same time think there are some things we have to really look at. And I feel like it's a challenge that he's challenging us to look at these things that we've done and not turn away from it. And I see it in Finkelstein Five, and I also see it in Lark Street as well. And layered on that, I find that there is a sense of, you know, when you actually look, you're not just seeing the violence, but you're seeing at the bottom of it. And this is why I stuck with the collection, is that there's like a hope and a humanity that sort of lifts you out of it. And so I'm never like left in that pit of despair and like violence, but there's always something, you know, and it really is. To me, it was really inspirational in that sense, oddly, even though it was kind of brutal. And the author gives you little breaks too. So he pairs, like, he'll do like what, Finkelstein Five, and then The Era, which was also like, to me, a big story in that collection. And then either before or after that, he gives you a little break with like these like one page stories or two page stories. And that one page story, Things My Mother Said.
Uh-huh.
Oh man. Tenderness. I was like, how dare you do that to me? And like mess with my emotions like that, you know? But it's just these sweet, like bittersweet, but sweet moments that he presents, and he kind of like just like inserts in there.
Yeah, just to kind of build on that, Sylvia and audience, it's the idea of looking and seeing, and it's not just what you look at, but what you see when you look at it. And what do you try to avoid to see? And I think that the beauty of the book is that when you're reading, you know, reading taps into your mind and you get visual images and all of those great things. But now it's like stark because we have a culture and a history that is in front of us. We have a time that is in front of us. And so, you know, the first story, you know, I thought about the Exonerated Five, you know, I thought about a lot of people who were decapitated in a different kind of way and stripped from their homeland, their culture. And so I think there's like such depth to a lot of these stories that you can look and read and understand the story as it is. but then there's something beyond that. And I think that that's the part that is intriguing and inviting, and it keeps you going. Because if you're a novice reader, some of the stories might just seem bizarre, and that's okay. I think most of them are very entertaining. So I think that that's okay too. But if you're an avid reader, you will begin to see certain patterns, I think. And those patterns will harken to things that are political, social, cultural, and all of those things are important and impactful, and I think meaningful in a real way. So looking and seeing are definitely themes, I think, embedded in a lot of the stories. And I also thought Lark Street was about writing.
I did too, Kofi. Yeah. And I was like, is it okay that I think that?
I had this moment, and again, I don't want to ruin the thing for
people. I think you can give a premise of what Lark Street is about, and then tell us what you see.
I feel like I'm writing.
I'll do it. Mild spoiler alert, people. You know, in Lark Street, it's basically two aborted fetuses talking to their father, who was integral in the decision to abort them. And so that's what we mean where, you know, we say it's not like for some of these stories, you know, they will, like, this is what Kofi means. This is what I'm taking as sort of, if you don't look beyond and see, right, and choose to see that, it will be just about what it is. But to me, that was about writing too, because I think you and I, you know, we as practicing writers, we think about these things a lot. I was actually hoping that one wasn't about writing, but like I was hoping that like it was just me, because I didn't want it to be about writing. And yet it was sort of fitting, you know, the idea that, you know, writing as an act of creation is a generative act, and the things that you create are precious to you. And I think there's nothing more powerful than that feeling that you've created something, you know, but.
Some of that stuff you created, you're gonna have to get rid of.
Yes, and it's some things you don't wanna get, you know, you don't want to, and some you can't wait. You're like, all right, you know, or some things it's just not, you want it to work out and it just doesn't work out. I'm actually experiencing that right now, Laura, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you want things to work out and it's just not working out, and I have to accept that.
You know, that's a really good, I don't think I read that story as a writer, right? I guess that's my, you know, I didn't have that hat on or perspective on, but I think that question about like what's beyond the story. So if somebody asks you, hey, what's that story about? And if it's only about aborted fetuses, like that does not sound like a story that a lot of people want to read. And that's one of the stories that could be turn people off. But then, you know, get into it and you think about like, I mean, there are lots of different topics that could come out of that, right? And you have to see something in it, in the story that you can take away from it. And for you too, it was the sort of maybe a metaphor for writing.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And then the hospital wear comes immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
It feels like this sort of ghost of deleted precious children is now rebirthed in, I'm going to create a situation with the hospital wear. And I think that there's something to that. Now, you know, the author would probably say, no, it's none of that. And that's fine. But like, no, you're way off.
It's before the lecture now.
I did hear that. I was in another book club where we talked about this book, and someone shared that they read that while some people read Lark Street as a pro-life position story, like, you know, like being against abortion or something, because, you know, the assumption is that the story is supposed to horrify you. So, you know, these are aborted fetuses. But then apparently the author, don't quote me on this, but apparently the author had said, no, that's not it. So I think that question of like, well, yeah, what is it? Like, what is it? And what is it doing beyond the thing that it's about on the surface? Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious how lots of different people read that story, if they can read the story.
You know? Yeah, I can see why some people would come to that interpretation, though,
because it's
being haunted and being terrified. But then you got to reconcile going to, you know, some of the extremes that happen within the story that wouldn't necessarily fit, you know, sort of the mysticism behind a lot of it, I think, is may undercut some of that interpretation. Right. But it does go back to what is it that you are looking at and what is it that you either want to see or you think you see. You know, I find all of the stories fascinating in that regard.
And I think it also in each story, how you feel about it, I think depends on which character you align yourself with or see the events through. So for example, I think Finkelstein 5, where the, you know, the premise being that story was a reaction to the Zimmerman verdict, Trayvon Martin case. And I think if you are aligning yourself with the narrator, the main character in the story, who's on this verge of possibly committing violence against supposedly, you know, innocent people. And in that moment, I paused and thought like, wait, who am I rooting for here? Like, am I rooting for this person who is enraged, right? And is feeling hurt and suffering and the injustice and seeking justice and all that. And I align myself with that character. But then of course you're looking sort of down also at the two innocent people who are begging for their lives. And, you know, do they deserve to be, you know, harmed or whatever? So I wondered in that moment or just throughout the book, like it, I think the impact of the story and how horrible it is or in what ways it's horrible to the reader depends on who you relate to in the story. So again, like that whole idea of like the reader bringing half of the experience to the book, right? It's not just all already prepackaged in the book. It's what I bring, what you bring to the book that's going to yield a different reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm also curious, like maybe it's sort of tied to that, Laura, the idea of like as a reader, the things that you're bringing in with you when you're reading something. But this collection specifically, the titles of the stories, some of them actually were really interesting to me, like the idea of the way that he's using titles to sort of almost mimic some of the headlines we see. And in some ways, I think, like, for example, you can't get away from the similarities of the story Zimmerland, you know, Zimmerman, and like the premise of the story and what it's like, you know, this, which I found to be like, that was one of the harder stories for me to read, I think, which surprised me because like, I think if you were to read it, it's not one of the harder, like, Lark Street might be harder for some people, but for me, Zimmerland was a little bit more difficult because I feel like Zimmerland was one of the stories where he kind of captures this, like the feeling of being trapped within this like intersection of racism and capitalism and like commercialism and consumerism. And that was the other layer of the book for me that was really, really interesting. So I believe Zimmerland comes before Friday Black, but up until Friday Black, there's like, you know, like a different types of stories about, you know, different ranging on different, you know, plot lines and things like that. But I felt like once I read Friday Black, which is the title story, and that the book kind of takes a shift. So I guess going back to the idea of the sequencing too, the book kind of takes a shift. So I would like categorize the stories as before and after Friday Black, because after Friday Black, I saw much more of the continuity of characters through like, into different stories. So like, you know, you would have some of the characters that showed up on Friday Black showing up again, you know, from their perspective in one of the subsequent stories. And then the shift of it becoming a lot more like rooted in one specific area of our capitalist systems, you know, like in retail, for example. But yeah, to me, that's what I felt like I was almost baited, like invited to like make these connections of, which you should be, right? It's literature of like, you know, George Zimmerman and, you know, even like the Finkelstein 5 is playing on these, you know, ideas of, was it the Central Park 5? Like, it's just all these things that are kind of inviting us to talk about Friday Black instead of Black Friday. I feel like he's creating almost this like mirror society, right? This dystopian society, but it's our society. And yet there's elements of like futurism in there. And there's elements of like, it's like the Netflix show Black Mirror, similar to that, where it's like our society, but like tilted. So I was curious about what you guys thought about the titles and the way that it plays out in the book.
Yeah, Black Mirror, if you've never seen it before, it's sort of speculative and it's kind of sci-fi-ish, but there is a commentary being examined and explored. And I think that that connection is really good. I'm still trying to make sense of some of the titles. So I'm not necessarily sure I can answer your question, Sylvia, because Lark Street really doesn't fit for me as a title. So there were some times I thought, is that a good title?
Well, a lark sings, a lark song.
Oh.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's not convincing me, but yeah. that's pretty good. That's your poetic license. I get it. But I think that titles are tricky because sometimes they mean something and they could actually mean nothing. And I just found some of the titles just like, huh.
What about Light Spitter?
Oh, I love
Light Spitter. That's hard to say, actually.
I like that title, actually. I like it for another reason, though. It sounds very hip-hop-ish, you know, and I like that. You know, so like a spitter in hip hop is someone who can really rap well and has lyrical ability. And in many ways, there's some of that there too. You know, there's just such layering there that I think for a reader to come into this book, I think he or she or they will find stories that they enjoy. One thing I will say, and I know we're running out, getting close to time, with story collections, you shouldn't treat them like novels, like you have to read chapter to chapter. It's almost better to try to read a story in the middle of the book in a collection, especially if they're not necessarily interconnected. And even when they are, the idea is that a short story should stand on its own as its own. And so I think one of the wonderful things about short story collections is that you can pick up a short story, read it, and then come back and pick up something else. It's almost like you have this newspaper with all these sections that you don't have to start with the front page. You can go to the sports section. You can go to the style section or something like that. So
is that what you did with this one?
Yeah, but I did it because of writing, and I like to see the writing and how it changes and the narrative techniques. But I'm not going to get into the critical part of what I think about the book because I don't want to discourage folk.
Well, I read the first half of the book in order, and then I read the second half backwards because I was told that the last story was like this big, like, oh, the, you know, that was a hard one to read, and a lot of people had a lot of strong reaction to it. So I definitely wanted to read the last one. So then the second half I read backwards, starting with the last story. And that was interesting too. I think, you know, Sylvia, you talked earlier about, like, even though the book feels heavy and there's, yes, violence and hard topics and issues, there's a sense of like uplifting and tenderness. And I do think the very, so this is like, I'm trying to entice people to read it. The last line of the last story, I think there is a sense of hope or something good at the end of a very terrible story, you know?
Well, throughout the whole, like each story, I feel like I see people, what I appreciate about his writing is that it gives me a sense, and this is true to what I see around me, is that people are capable of horrible things, but also the same people have some goodness in, like, they are also capable of good things, you know? And it's a really hard tension to navigate, that someone can make such a terrible decision and yet, you know, at the same time, be a human, like a full human, and, you know, have compassion and be capable of that. I think we tend to want to write off people who have done terrible things as a one and done. But I think that part of the choosing to see is that he kind of requires us to do that. I actually read, with short story collections, Kofi, I tend to read the title story first. So I read Friday Black first. Ah. Yeah. And because I'm like, it's the title for a reason. So like, and every time I do that, I am not disappointed, you know, because I'm like, all right, that's why it's the title story. So like I did it with it. There's another short story collection called Sour Heart by Jenny Zhang. And her title story, I believe, is the first story too. And I understand why it's the first story, because it's just crazy. Like that first sentence is a page long and it's like, it's nuts. Like, what am I reading? But, with Friday Black, I read Friday Black first, and then I read the subsequent couple stories after, and then I skipped over to the front of the book, and then I started reading it that way. And it was really, it was a journey. It's interesting.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio. The Bodder Lecture at HCC hosts author Nana Kwame Erje Brenya on Thursday, March 4th at noon. Join in on the live Q&A following a keynote and conversation with fellow author Tope Falarin. RSVP today for this exciting virtual event at howardcc.com/Bodder Lecture.